from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Final hour fist pump time on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Thank you for being a Tolo. That stands for Turn It On and Leave It On. The Thursday edition is live with Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and Bobby Belt. We talked plenty of Cowboys and NFL being the home of America's team. Let's talk a little college with the longtime great Armin Katayan, who has the book that is coming out, The Price and What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. Good morning, Armin. How you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Doing pretty well. First question, do you think if everyone can go back and redo NIL, that they would? Was this pushed out and rushed out too quickly? Or if they could go back and never create NIL, would the powers that be choose that?
Well, if you're talking about the powers that be in Indianapolis, you certainly can say, yeah, they'd like to see that, you know, head over the horizon and never come back. I think student athletes, though, would tell you that it was long overdue. And,
yeah,
you know, it's a complicated story. And it really, it's kind of a reap what you sow proverb come to life in terms of, you know, the NCAA and in the court system, not to get too legal here, but in the court system, time and time and time again, going back decades, had an opportunity to settle or to come up with a revenue sharing plan that would have been equitable for the workers that were providing the vast amount of revenue. And instead, the NCAA just dug its heels in and, you know, delayed and denied and lost time and time again in court. That led to the July 2021 Supreme Court ruling, the unanimous ruling by the courts that opened the door and opened the floodgates to NIL. And, you know, after that, it was, you know, it's Katie bar the door, so to speak. I mean, what we're dealing with now is really the result of the stubbornness and the arrogance of the association to not share what has now become billions of dollars of revenue. So, you know what? I don't have a great deal of sympathy for the folks back in Indianapolis at this point in time, because as someone said to me, a senior official there now, and I think under Charlie Baker, they're a lot smarter and they're a lot more in the moment, pragmatic. And he said to me, he said, Armin, we had ample opportunity time and time again to take the air out of this inflated tire, meaning the NIL market. And we just refused to do so. They refused to do so. This is the new administration. And we're paying for it right now. And they're paying for it in you know, a dozen different ways.
So they clearly recognize they've been neutered. What is their future? What is their, like, outlook?
Well, I think right now what's happened is the NCAA, you know, has time and time again put in these series of guardrails, they call them, to kind of give some sense of propriety and transparency to a pretty opaque process right now. And every time they do that, somebody goes to court, Exhibit A, Tennessee and their collective, go to court and say, no, this is a suppression of wages. This is in violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act. You can't do this. You're a cartel. You can't unilaterally make these decisions. Whereas before, people just went along and got along. Not anymore. They're fighting every inch now for student rights and for the right to be able to dictate their own future. So I don't have a great deal of hope in the near term. Our book spends time with couple of very interesting senators, Dick Blumenthal from Connecticut, who's a very smart guy and is a former AG in Connecticut, and has tried to work with Cory Booker in New Jersey to put together a, you know, a proposed legislation. And then you've got Tommy Tuberville on the other hand, who is at the opposite end of that spectrum, you know, in terms of the respect that he has in Congress. And so, and he's talking about getting rid of NIL. So that gives you an idea of where his head is at. So at this point in time, I just think it's just chaos, and it's the wild, wild west. And there's a couple of reasons for it. One, there's a lot of greed going on, wanton greed, everybody looking for the next big dollar number. And there's just a great deal of self-interest in, okay, what's in it for us? How do we protect our university? How do we not end up being like Oregon State and Washington State on the outside looking in? So when you have all those elements, guys, you still have a great game, as probably as college football is as good a place on the field as it's ever been. But off the field, it's a three-ring circus right now.
Armin, what happened with the downfall of Jimbo Fisher at A&M?
Well, that's a really interesting question. You know, there's a chapter that John Talty, who just briefly, people that know John, he's a college football, national college football writer for CBS Sports and 24/7. And I didn't really know John. I knew of John when we decided to collaborate, but he kind of reminds me of a young me. He's very relentless. He's obsessive in his reporting. He's very careful. He's well-versed in the SEC. He's been covering it for 10 years. And he wrote this, what I think is a really revealing psycho profile of the rise and fall of Jimbo Fisher, as it's called. And it's really based on, I think, words like arrogance and stubbornness and ego. It charts Jimbo's rise from the hills of West Virginia through Cincinnati and Florida State and Alabama, certainly with Nick Saban, and then A&M in the fall of his program. And there's a couple of things in there where Jimbo was obsessed, even when he was at Florida State, he was obsessed with what Nick had at Alabama. These two West Virginia guys who were alpha dogs, both of them. And, you know, one thing where he saw that Nick was flying around recruiting in a helicopter and he could make 10 stops in one day. And Jimbo said straight up to the president, John Thrasher at Florida State at the time, says, "I want a damn helicopter. That's what I want." And, you know, it's not just, you can just go, it's not like I want a Mercedes, you know, it's not like I just need even a Lamborghini down there in Texas now. I want a damn helicopter. And as John reports, you know, after he won the title, it just changed for Jimbo. You know, he became much more demanding, became much more egocentric. And then you had that incredible NIL episode at A&M with Nick calling him out on the supposed $30 million recruiting class. And, you know, you got a guy, a social media guy named Slice Bread, who's, you can't make some of this stuff up, you know, who is he fires the first warning shot. But I think what A&M is in Jimbo, you know, when you, and then again, when you get $76 million to take a walk, you know, down the road, that tells you a lot about what A&M has to offer. And I think for us, and what we were hearing is when A&M went all in with they've got everything you need in terms of the booster network, the facilities, the want to, the college president, anything and everything you need to win a national championship is sitting there in College Station. And what happened with that, whatever the amount of money was, whether it was $10 million or $20 million or $30 million, but as Nick charged, if you buy your top recruiting class, what that did was it just opened the doors in places like Ohio State, Oregon with Division Street, John Ruiz down in Miami, Tennessee. Everybody goes, oh, okay, it's open season now. So this is the game. And when you do that, that's when you were saying, going back to the NCAA trying to get their hands on this thing. When that exploded like kind of an atomic bomb down there in College Station, all the other power players in the game were like, oh, okay, those are the new rules? Great, we're all in. And then everybody else has to play follow the leader. So it just ends up being what we're witnessing right now is programs like Ohio State saying, look, to get a class we need to win a national championship, it's $20 million. And, you know, you pity poor Maryland. It's kind of the Macy's, as we talk about. There's a chapter John wrote, a couple chapters called Macy's, which are just great. The last thing you want to be right now in college football is Macy's, because you got above you, you have Saks Fifth Avenue, and they're taking your top players. And below, you have the Targets of the world, and some of those people that are discount shopping pick your roster off too. So you're getting it from both sides, and it's a very unpleasant situation to be in if you're a head coach.
Arn Bogatain, join us here 105 Through the Fan. The book is called The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. You detail Nick Saban's final year. Was he kind of checked out in the final year? Like, did he know this was it? And why? What was the final decision to get out?
Well, I don't think he checked out. I think he saw the realities of what was happening in it. And if you had to define, if you use one word to define Nick's organization, as he calls it, it's control. Nick wanted complete control over every aspect. And I'm talking about making sure and talking to the janitor that the bathrooms were clean, so when recruits came in, if they had to go to the restroom, the first thing they saw was how spotless everything was. So you're talking top to bottom kind of obsessiveness. And clearly, Nick saw what was happening, probably before almost anybody else, being Nick, saw the handwriting on the wall. But what happened was after they lost to Michigan in the Rose Bowl in the semifinals of the playoffs, Nick went to his beachfront estate down in Jupiter, Florida, and on the Atlantic Ocean. And,
wow.
You know, it's not a bad place to go.
Right.
And I was communicating with, I've been close to Nick and Terry, his wife, for several years now. And, you know, Terry was worn out, and she saw the writing on the wall. These new rules she had texted me were just murder, dealing with all the change and everything. And when Nick came back, he took a little longer time away than he normally would. He came back and he had a line of players outside of his office, and they weren't there to ask the head coach, you know, okay, coach, what do I do in the off season to get better, development program, or what is it that I need to do to get on the field more next year? No, it was, coach, I need more money, NIL money, or I'm going to go into the portal. And the whole idea of the development system that Nick had in place at Alabama that eventually paid great dividends for so many players going into the NFL just had broken down. And I know Nick was just tired of that. He's like, as Terry said to him, you know, what are we doing here? Why do we need this? And in the end, he didn't need it. But, you know, there's a player, there's collateral damage there. You know, Caleb Downs ended up, and a great, great defensive player ends up going to Ohio State. But one of the great characters in our book is a kid named Julian Sain, who was the number one quarterback in the country in the class of 2024, a terrific generational talent. And the only reason he went to Alabama, he could have gone to Texas. He could have gone to Notre Dame. He could have gone to Penn State. He could have gone anywhere he wanted to, and he would have made a pant load of money, NIL money. He went to Alabama because he wanted to be the next great quarterback in a line of great quarterbacks, first-round draft choices that had come out of Tuscaloosa. And Julian's in his first day of classes, he has a 3 o'clock class, his first class in his new year, his freshman year. And what happens at 3 o'clock, the class ends, he goes to the team meeting at 4 o'clock. By 4:05, Nick has informed the team that he's retiring. So here's a kid, the only reason he came to Alabama was because of the head coach. And now he's dealing with the drama and the heartbreak of, now what do I do? And in the book, there's a series of things that happened afterwards. I won't give it all away, but there's a reason that he's now at Ohio State. And unless I miss my guess, he'll start for the Buckeyes next year as a sophomore. So that's, you talk about the collateral damage and the chaos that's going on in college football. That never would have happened before, never. And now that's just sort of an everyday occurrence.
Hey, Armin, Will Hall, the head coach at Southern Miss, gave an interview this spring where he said he doesn't even get to do anything really related to football anymore. that he said everything that he does is related to culture and basically fundraising. Are we going to see a shift where college coaches are eventually, like, programs are looking less for people who are really good X's and O's football guys, and programs instead are looking for who's the best salesman, who's the best business-minded individual to come in here and be a CEO?
Yeah, that's, I was thinking the exact word, CEO. I think you're right. I think the reason we called the price is it's not just the physical or not just the financial implications and the billions of dollars that are pouring in. It's the emotional and the psychological and the physical toll that this sport is taking on head coaches or even college presidents, athletic directors, conference commissioners, compliance people, all the way down. It's a 24/7 job, 365 days a year now. And that's exactly right. Is for a head coach, the culture in your locker room has dramatically shifted now because of money. You bring in a class, let's say you bring in an edge rusher, or you bring in a quarterback, or you bring in a running back, and the word gets out that, oh, that's a $750,000 pie. Well, what does that do to your locker room?
Yeah.
What does that do to the culture of your team? And that's what happened at A&M with Jimbo and the whatever the number was when those new recruits came in, and they were they good enough to even get on the field? A lot of them weren't. The culture that we heard, it was a pretty awful down there. And that's, you're absolutely right. These coaches are consumed now with just making sure that every 6 months, whether the NCAA is going to close this spring portal or not remains to be seen, because there's probably going to be a lawsuit over that too. But can you imagine coming out of spring ball and you think you have your roster set, and all of a sudden you've got half of your backups are coming in saying, Coach, I heard from this agent who said to me I could get $500,000 if I go into the portal. I don't want to go, but I need some money. Yeah. Okay, that's your before you have lunch, you've probably had three of those happen. Or if you're Michael Oxley in Maryland, as we detail in the book, and John did some great reporting on Maryland, is he had Talia Tungabailoa and two other players come into his office, Talia basically doing his father's bidding that necessarily he didn't want to have to do, but he wanted $50,000 before he would agree to play in a bowl game.
Wow.
I mean, there's a word for that. It gets pretty close to extortion. And Mike had to find a way to come up with enough money to pay his players to play in a game.
Wow.
Because it was so important to the program at Maryland, in the future of that program. And Mike, to his credit, was like, hey man, this is the way of the world right now. I can't do it differently. I got to find a way to make this work. But, you know, if you read those chapters, you have some sympathy for what Michael Oxley's going through at Maryland, because they're the last place you want to be is in the middle right now.
Armin, thank you so much for the time. Congratulations on another book, and enjoy the college football season.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Armin Katan on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Who is the best running back on the Dallas Cowboys?
Trey Lance.
And Nick Harris is... You should take off tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
You get the day off. Yeah. And Nick Harris is hyped up for high school football season as well. Nick joins us from DallasCowboys.com next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Harris, DallasCowboys.com. Every Thursday, brought to you by the Windstar World Casino and Resort. Proud to be the casino of the Dallas Cowboys. Please game responsibly. And we have some news, Bobby, to throw Nick's way.
We do. Todd Archer reporting that the Cowboys have signed to their practice squad cornerback Amani Oruwariye, who has started 36 games throughout his career, all of it for the Lions, I believe. He was with the Jaguars very briefly last year, but corner with some size. He's like 6'3", 200 pounds, and so he is. He's been added as depth.
And Adam Schefter says Dalvin Cook will be wearing number 20. There's a sign of the Dallas Cowboys right there. Like, a running back who many people think is done gets tweeted by Adam Schefter the number that he's wearing just because he's playing on this football team. If he goes and signs with Denver, they're not saying Dalvin Cook will be wearing number 20 with the Denver Broncos.
I don't remember them telling us what number he was wearing with the Jets last year. Like, I don't remember that being a report. So
Nick Harris joining us on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Nick, any reaction to those stories?
Yeah, so Oruwariye, obviously some size to the outside. I mean, they're going to have some help out there at corner for at least the first 4 weeks with Jerron Bland being down with his foot fracture. So, you know, I see this as just extra added depth to that position group once this is finalized. This is just a guy that they could bring off the practice squad in case another injury does arise. But as you mentioned, Bobby, 6'2", 200 pounds. That's just more length there out on the boundary. And he had 6 interceptions back in 2021 with Detroit, so he's definitely a ball hawk. I think he would work well with an Al Harris-type system, but it would just be a matter of him getting on the field, and I think we would talk about him. But, the number thing, I don't remember a number 33 tweet from Adam Schefter with the Jets last year. That's 100%.
Now, speaking of corners, you've been doing a lot of homework. Tell us about the work you've been doing on Kalen Carson.
Yeah, so Kalen Carson, are you talking about the tattoo?
Well, I thought you wrote a feature article where there's a DallasCowboys.com pinned story.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, Kalen Carson, he's obviously getting ready to go for in place of Jerron Bland for these first 4 weeks. It's going to be a big opportunity for him. And, you know, there's a lot of parallels being drawn between him and Bland because Bland also had to step in as a rookie fifth-round pick and, fill in a starting role for a large amount of time. But for Kalen, he said, I'm not looking at anybody else's story. I'm trying to write my own. And so, you know, that's a big deal. And as far as the tattoo thing goes, I saw that he had a huge neck piece last night that I didn't remember seeing whenever he was at Oxnard in training camp. So it turns out fairly shortly after he got done with his wisdom tooth surgery that he had to have during camp, he turned around and got a neck piece, and it's just this big tattoo on the side of his neck. And I was like, man, you're just kind of a sucker for pain, aren't you? So, you know, this guy, he's locked in, ready to go for the year. But I think with the mentality of Kalen Carson, we've heard about it from Al Harris. We've heard about it from Mike Zimmer. This is a guy who's ready to step in these first 4 weeks. And now the products are going to have to show. The results are going to have to show. It's going to be a big opportunity for him.
Also a practice yesterday, Jerry Jones, I thought, had 2 noteworthy things come out of his comments about Dak's deal maybe getting done next. Translate Jerry Jones for us, please.
You could easily say, if you hadn't seen it by now, you haven't seen it. And so I'm such a fan of Dak's and appreciate all of the great things that we all know that he's there. And I appreciate his work ethic probably more than anything out here. And I can't tell you how proud I am that we've got him this year to start this campaign. Needing to see, I just gave an explanation of where, when you look at a situation, you've also got to weigh, okay, what are the consequences of the other side of the coin? And so Dak's situation right now, for me, from my mirror, has more to do with our situation than it does with the merits of Dak Prescott being quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys.
Nick, what stands out more? You could easily say if you haven't seen it by now, you haven't seen it, or this whole thing has to do with our situation more than Dak.
Yeah, I think it's probably that latter quote. And I know this is a big salad, and that's always the big tough part about dissecting a Jerry Jones interview or a Jerry Jones press availability. I'll give you the 2 sentences that stuck out to me whenever he was talking about Dak yesterday. He said, Lamb wasn't here, Dak is here. We really have no more to do to have this season on go by opening day. So that tells me that you know, there isn't any urgency. I know that's a key word we've been hearing. And I don't think there's a lot of urgency to be done with a Dak deal before the start of the season. And he was asked later in the press availability, okay, does that mean that once the season starts, that talks discontinue? And he said, no, absolutely not. They will continue as they have been going on. But, I mean, if you're looking at it from Dak Prescott's perspective, right, and you get a deal done before the start of the season, you're only shorting yourself what you could get out in the open market out in February or March. And even if he does want to be a Dallas Cowboy, and that is his long-term goal, and he's not fronting on that, then he can still get more pennies out of Jerry Jones whenever February, March does come back around. So, I mean, it would have to come to both sides coming to the negotiation table and understanding, like, okay, hey, this is where both sides want to be. Where can we get a deal to where it maximizes both of our outputs? And I don't see that happening before the start of the season, but it wouldn't surprise me if they try to get something done before then.
Nick, who is the most talented running back on the roster?
Talented. Oh, man, that's a tough one. You know, if you could tell me that Rico Dowdle would be healthy for 17 games, you know, I would almost lean in that direction. But, you know, the best ability is availability, and we haven't seen that from Rico Dowdle in his first 4 or 5 years in the league out of South Carolina. So for me, I think whenever you factor all of that in, if you're expecting somebody to be available, then you probably look at Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, he did have 50-plus receptions last year. He's still reliable in short yardage and in pass protection, but I still don't believe that they have, you know, the difference maker in that room. But, you know, adding Dalvin Cook, I think that's going to be an interesting layer to the whole ordeal. And, you know, if they ramp him up in these first 4 weeks, get him on the roster in some way, shape, or form and see what he can do, it definitely could add a jolt. But as I said on Tuesday, I didn't love what I saw from him in 2023. I'm not 100% sure he could bring anything to that room in 2024.
Is Cook a guy you think that will get an elevation week one, or is this going to be a gradual ramp up before he starts getting elevations and then potentially signed to the active roster?
I think it's more so going to be gradual. I think they are going to give these three running backs a full opportunity. When I say three, Ezekiel Elliott, Rico Dowdle, and Deuce Vaughn, I think they, in these first couple of games, those are going to be the guys that get these opportunities. And, you know, you also have to think about it from a CeeDee Lamb perspective. You know, is he going to be that 60-play guy? CeeDee says he will be, but if he's not, they're going to need to lean on the running game just a little bit more in those first couple of games. And if that's the case, you may as well see what you got in that room while you can.
Here's the tweet from Nick Harris 9 hours ago. So Texas high school football is back today, and there is not a better sporting spectacle on planet Earth than what will be going down in Hamilton, Texas tonight. The Ice Bowl at 90 degrees. Tell us about this and your high school football excitement.
Oh, man. Yeah, football is back, and I'm not talking Colorado, North Dakota State tonight, guys. It's Texas high school football. So Frost, which is a town about 30 minutes south of Waxahachie, they'll be taking on Winters, which is a town south of Abilene. So it's the Frost Polar Bears and the Winters Blizzards. They're going to meet halfway in Hamilton tonight in the Ice Bowl, 90 degrees. Let's get weird. We're going to have some fun tonight. 2A Division II football. But, I love it. It's they used to be separated by 200 miles. Tonight they'll only be separated by opposite sidelines.
What else are you looking forward to this season?
Yeah, so tomorrow night, the South Oak Cliff Golden Bears, got to give a shout-out to Coach Jason Todd, making his way down I-45 to take on 6A Powerhouse North Shore. It's a big-time game for that program. You know, South Oak Cliff, these last few years, they have not been afraid to schedule some big-time hitters in non-district, and it doesn't get any bigger than North Shore, in my opinion. So they're going to go down to Houston, go into Harris County, and they're looking to come away with a win down there. It would be a monumental win to start off their campaign, but the two-time state champion, South Oak Cliff Golden Bears, hoping they start off their season well. You also got Argyle and Frisco Lone Star at Toyota Stadium tomorrow night. That's going to be a really good one. Two teams that are always in the fourth and fifth round of the playoffs. Lone Star has a running back, and Davian Gross, that is going to be a top 20 recruit in the country this time next year. Really good talent. But if you're a Texas high school football fan or just a football fan in general and you don't know a whole lot about the high school landscape, get involved this year. You're literally in the best metroplex in the world for high school football. It's going to be a fun year.
Who's the school that cheats the most by holding all their kids back and have a bunch of 20-year-olds playing?
Stop.
It's not that anymore. It's more so, hey, we're going to show up at your middle school in eighth grade and trying to recruit you over to this high school. That's the problem these days.
Fantastic stuff, Nick. Thank you, man. We appreciate it.
Sounds great, guys. Y'all have a good
one. Nick Harris, brought to you by the Windstar World Casino and Resort. Proud to be the official casino of the Dallas Cowboys. Please game responsibly. What was the disturbing number you had about Nick?
in high school?
Oh, it's the college players he's already been watching. He watched 150 college players over the summer getting ready for draft next year.
Wow.
Nick Harris, loving himself some pigskin. We were loving ourselves some Travis Jankowski. Was Mike Bassick loving himself some Leiter and Kumar? Crosstalk with the KMC Masterpiece is next.
All right, the 1-2. That's in the air left field. That's trouble. Jankowski back. And he finds a catch. Oh, my goodness, what a grab. He brings the game back.
Dave Raymond with the call.
That's a great call, by the way.
Maybe that is the spark they needed to go on a run.
Jankowski, Langford, Leiter, Rocker. Seager, all shining yesterday for your Texas Rangers and Texas Rangers organization.
Would the Rangers make the playoffs
if they started today?
Every single one of their games left was against the White Sox.
We have the best record in the league.
I think they would get it really close. I think we would have a fun final week.
That fourth inning was exactly the White Sox. Like the two players converging up the middle, no communication, and then the guy trying to tag the runner, and then the ball flopping out.
Nate Lowe was running, yeah.
The interference, yeah.
And in between innings when the second baseman got chunked in the head because he wasn't watching.
Do you ever watch like the movie Angels in the Outfield?
Yeah.
And like they always have this, like the Angels are painted as like this just disaster organization where all the players are idiots and stuff like that. And you're like, this is not a real representation of a team that kind of does feel like the White Sox.
It looks like they never went to spring training and they never practiced baseball. It's like they got
a whole team of CD
26
Lambs.
Athletes and just said, hey, you want to try this baseball thing out? And they're like,
all right.
It's
major league level, ground ball up the middle like that.
Yeah.
Surely there's communication. Like,
well,
because it was on the second base side, so like, but the shortstop's still the captain.
In a way, no. So when the way that I can say it is, when there's a slow roller towards first base, I like communication. I like screaming, "I got it!" If I'm the pitcher running to get the ball, but they say they don't want you communicating on that. It's more of a read. And so you're just supposed to have like a read that like you go after it, but if you can't get it, just go to the base as fast as you can. But the first baseman, to me, my opinion, I disagree with that teaching. Now, I'm not an infield coach because now I feel like the first baseman's left in no man's land.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't say anything, I think the first baseman should sprint to the ball, get it as fast as he can to try to get it to the pitcher. If the pitcher yells, "I got it, I got it," now the first baseman needs to sprint to the base. So if I do get it, I can flip it to you to try to beat the runner. But yet I was told by all the organizations, no communication on that. So I'm going to assume that there's no communication on balls up the middle or when the third baseman cuts across the shortstop. Like, it's just a read. It's just an athletic read by both of those guys. And the more you play together, the more you know each other and the range that you have and the ability that you have.
Mike's dead on with that one.
Corey, the Jankowski catch.
I mean, like, just the coaching I always received about infield was exactly what Mike said. Like, they're not a communication at all.
Where's the Jankowski catch, Corey, in the Rangers history?
I mean, second to Gary Matthews. But the timing of it is freaking great.
My oldest son thought it was better than Gary Matthews.
It's the first, according to Evan Grant from Sports Info Solutions, it's the first potential walk-off home run that's been robbed all year.
There you go, Mike. You were asking that.
I was wondering if it's the first one ever in the history of the Rangers. I don't remember. Now, look, in the history of baseball, this game won't be remembered. But unless, like, the Chicago White Sox have the worst record in baseball history by one game, and then they'll go, we actually had a walk-off home run.
When the Rangers go 23-4 the rest of the way.
Great.
The playoffs.
But I can't remember in my lifetime a player for the Rangers ever robbing a home run that was in the ninth inning that would have walked off the game.
Mike, what did you see from Leiter as Bruce Bochy once again said in the post? Little amped up. A little bit amped up out there.
100% amped up. He was okay. I see the ability to be a good pitcher, but he just can't execute his pitches on a consistent basis yet. Now, the hope is he can.
He needs to calm down.
He You see the pitch that he has to throw. At least for me, I know. I'm like, all right, throw a breaking ball here at the bottom of the zone or below the zone, and it's over. And then he hangs a breaking ball. Or he throws it so bad that now the hitter knows, oh, that was a crap pitch, and you just eliminate that pitch. So he just gets into situations where major league hitters can eliminate pitches, and then they can look for that pitch. They know approximately the location he's going to throw it in, and then they'll hit him. But it's there every once in a while where you'll see this nasty breaking ball, or you'll see the elevated fastball well executed, and you're just like, it's there. Or the changeup. He threw a back-to-back changeup, so I'm like, that was great pitching right there. It's just he doesn't follow it up consistently yet. And I guess that's the tough part about Jack Leiter is he's only 24. Will he be able to do that next year? Will he be able to do that in September? The other thing, too, is every time he starts, he throws 30 pitches in the first inning. Yeah. I mean, I need to go back, but I feel like every time.
Catcher's interference pitches. Doesn't help. Like, that didn't help. No. But he started off with, what, four straight pitches that for
balls?
To a
dude who's a singles hitter. Yeah. Like, I mean, he just can't hit extra base hits.
Does it seem like, and I know it's, like, tough for anyone, but he doesn't have, at least he hasn't shown, the ability to throw a fastball in a fastball count and it not get hit. Right? Like, isn't that like a great pitcher has to be able to throw a fastball in a fastball count and it not get just tattooed?
Yes, but there's no doubt right now in the hitter's mind that he has to throw that pitch. And I would say that with Gerrit Cole, I don't know, Chris Sale, I'm trying to think of guys, right? Even right now, Paul Skeens. Even though it's a fastball count, and he's probably going to throw a fastball, in the back of the hitter's mind is he can throw a secondary pitch for a strike here. And right now, it's very early. They're like, I don't believe he can throw a breaking ball here for a strike, so I'm really sitting dead red.
Corey, what's coming up on the show?
Guys, who are the most interesting NFL starting quarterbacks to watch right out of the gate? And then the best run franchises, most unstable, where's that going to be in 2025? We do that at 10:20. And guys, our show's done early today.
Oh.
12:30. We get to say,
we don't make the schedule, Sean. Yeah,
we get to move on and listen to another Rangers White Sox game that'll probably be finished with one run between the two teams.
We got seven ratings. Runs yesterday.
Yeah, you know what? You don't make the schedule, but you don't try to stop it either.
So I've seen some of the numbers. Maybe I shouldn't try to stop it.
Oh man.
Mike was making fun of television talking way more Cowboys than our entire radio station because it's desperation time before the season actually kicks off. I want to play the reason why and see who can point out the point of the audio. This is Stephen A. Smith talking about Ohtani and Aaron Judge yesterday.
On the verge of becoming a 50-50 player. By the way, they have game better than the New York Yankees. We can't ignore that. And then we want to give Aaron Judge credit, and he deserves it, because a .465 on base percentage is lethal. It's phenomenal, no doubt about it. But you do got Juan Soto batting up behind you. You understand what I'm saying? They can't get around you a little bit. So, I mean, they got to pitch to the brother. You understand what I'm saying? Because you got Soto waiting in the wings. So all of those things facilitate Aaron Judge being who he is.
Michael, you wanted to guess first?
Doesn't it go Soto then Judge? Yeah. I'm, because here's the deal. I don't watch every Yankee game, so I'm like, maybe when they throw a lefty, maybe it switches.
Pretty much all year, like Soto too.
This is the tough part about, like, this is why they don't do baseball. He's just making words, as many words as he can.
Because, like, Shohei bats leadoff, right? Almost exclusively.
A lot of times. When Mookie got... Yeah. When Mookie's back, have they changed that a little bit? I mean,
Mookie batted second yesterday.
Yeah.
So he either has like Mookie or Freeman batting behind him, which is like those are great guys to have behind. Now Judge will have Stanton
right
when he's healthy. Sometimes. But so Soto hits first or before him.
I'm looking at yesterday's lineup. It's amazing how like the Yankees are great, and they really you can argue here. Kind of only have two really good hitters, and everybody else is average. I know that Chisholm's done a pretty good job since he's been traded. But
my theory was that he knew Soto hit second, and he just doesn't know what a header behind means. I'm dead serious. Like I think he thinks of behind as being you're second. You're not in the meat of like you're behind that.
It's tough. I mean, the ESPN has gone a certain direction over the last decade approximately, and it is kill baseball, which is weird because they do have Sunday night baseball, but they've decided if we can kill baseball as much as we can. And I get it from a perspective. I get it. Football definitely dominates, and then most of their hosts do like basketball. And then they bring in basketball people to really help out those segments. They just don't have anybody under contract anymore that they've hired to actually talk baseball, so they can't help these guys out.
Are you excited for high school football at all?
Hell yeah. I love high school football. It's super fun. I'm glad that you guys hit it every single week.
Yeah. Don't crush that.
Yeah, he's fantastic, but that's like how me and Corey started in the professional business.
They always give me such hell whenever I just go to watch a high school football game where it's like, oh, these are two big teams. I'm going to go watch it. Even if I don't know somebody there, I'll go watch like a high school game. They're like, the atmosphere think that's weird.
It's not. The atmosphere can be fantastic.
We're just
I wish you had more
him.
Friends. We're just but yeah, yeah.
He's got a big family. He still just leaves. Just
doesn't I don't talk to half of them.
What does your wife think about? You're like, I'm going out to watch high school football. And she's like, okay.
Have a great day.
Yeah, she probably thinks it's like a fake cover for something else. Yeah. Knowing her, she probably
that's
thinks
that's where
like,
the makeup came from in the car.
Oh, yeah. The compact in the car. Boy, no, I won that. Boy, she hasn't been able to throw much my way since that happened.
Have you been taking advantage of being right on that and holding that over her head, as I hope you would?
I've reminded her a few times. Yeah. I tend to like
you should get like a necklace or a chain to really remind her.
You should get
the compact makeup around a chain.
You know how you know how Drake had the necklace with the 38 diamonds on it?
Don't lead him.
But I mean, I could. You know how Drake had the 38 diamonds for each time he thought of proposing to a girl or whatever like that? I'm going to add a new diamond every time I'm right about something.
Yeah.
Over her. And then, I mean,
so too.
Going to have a big Flavor Flav necklace. I'm not even going to be able to hold my head up.
So two diamonds.
I have one time, more thing time. Before you get, better be you know, good. Home to take your nap.
Yeah.
Is...
At 2:00.
If the Yankees play the Dodgers in the World Series, how much coverage do you think that gets on a morning basis? Because I get when it was Rangers Diamondbacks, like screw it, we don't care. Keep covering the NFL, cover college football, we don't care. But if it is Yankees Dodgers, I feel like they will say we have to do two or three segments on this morning show on Yankees versus Dodgers.
Does society guilt them into it like they did with the WNBA? That'll be the biggest question. If they do effectively, then we'll hear about it. Like for instance, I know everything I know about the WNBA is against my will, thanks to DNA piping up. Caitlin Clark, by the way, six straight games of 15 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists that they led with on ESPN this morning.
That's the most in WNBA history. Which
I know.
I
it's
felt
almost like the game is not very good.
It's because the MNBA hasn't had a long like history
MNBA,
before.
The you know? MNBA.
Yeah, the MNBA.
You like
yeah.
That?
Yeah. You're like, he's like ESPN. ESPN doesn't call it the College World Series anymore. Now it's the Men's College World Series.
Yeah. Oh.
They have to put,
the MNBA's had a head start. The WNBA had to catch up.
I appreciate what you're doing. When Trey Lance had the fumble in the last preseason game, the snap fumbled, then he picked it right back up. You know what we were calling that in the press box? The Angel Reese special.
Oh, very nice. That's who are the good. Other media members who said it?
It was pretty good.
Me and Eric.
Oh. Yeah. Again, no friends. We're back tomorrow.
Coolest
the
friend.
KMC masterpiece next on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So cash the ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.